Close your eyes and imagine what you'll look like 6 months from now. How's your hair look? The same? Now picture how your hair would look if you started using Hims. If you're picturing the same you as before, but with much thicker and fuller hair, you'd be correct. What can happen in 3 to 6 months? You could pick up a new hobby and get not that good at it yet. You could do about half of your New Year's resolution. You could learn a few songs on the piano or pick up bass guitar. Or you could start seeing thicker, fuller hair regrowth through Hims. Not bad for just 3 to 6 months. Men, if you're starting to notice your hair thinning when you look in the mirror, you're not alone. Life just gets busier and busier, and it can feel like there's not enough time in the day to do something about it. So, try Hims Hair Loss Solutions. You can avoid jumping through a bunch of frustrating hoops and get access to treatment without even leaving your home. Hims provides you with the convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary based on studies on topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Your child has so much potential, but your local schools may not be right for them. Check out K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited tuition-free online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're back for part two of the offensive tackle countdown. If you didn't listen to part one with James Ogden, my guest here, you missed one of the really great discussions, I think, that we've had on this show in a long time. But James, appreciate you joining me for this show and spending a couple hours, maybe 2.5 out of your night doing this with me.
I appreciate you too, Ken. It's one of my favorite things to do every year, this one of these draft episodes with you.
It's definitely a fun format. Okay, well, so far we've had largely lockstep, one place apart in a lot of cases. The only significant difference we had was on Josh Connerly, but we'll go through our 10 to 6 right now. So at number 10, you had who? Remind me again.
Logan Brown, right? Was my number 10. Yeah.
And I had Gray Zabel as my number 10, or Zabel. And I had number 9 was Logan Brown for me. And your number 9 was?
It was Ozzie Trapillo. It was your number 8, I think.
Number 8 for me. And then number 7 for you was?
And number 7 for me was Josh Connerly.
Okay. And I have him all the way up at number 4. So we didn't agree on that. We had a little bit of discussion that's worth maybe listening to on that. My number 7 guy was Jonah Sava-Inaya of Arizona, who you had at number 6.
Yep.
So lockstep in that. And then continuing the difficult to pronounce, so I had Ariante Irsari at number 6, and you have him at number 5.
Yeah, that's right.
So we've already done one of the top 5 for each of this, so maybe we'll be a little quicker, but anytime we say that and we get into a discussion about offensive linemen, I know that's probably not going to work out that way. But you're up next. Who is your number 5 guy?
So my number 5 is Irsari. So I don't know whether we want to go over too much on Ursary. Who was your number five?
Yeah, my number five guy is Josh Simmons of Ohio State. Now, here's the problem with Simmons. He would rate much higher if we knew where he is. He comes in with medical flags, had a torn patellar tendon at midseason last year. Now, this is where there's something funky going on, and I don't know exactly what. So I'm working off some information, would not materially change my list because he still fits in somewhere between five and maybe two on my list. But there was information published yesterday about the, which was 3/26, which was the day of Ohio State's pro day. And it's out there on NFL Draft Buzz, which is usually very accurate about their information. And I'm just going to read these numbers to you because this really colors it tremendously. They have him as a 40 time at 5:46, a shuttle of 5:20, which is that's in the first percentile, folks. A vertical jump of 21 inches, again, first percentile. Maybe I'd expect that out of an injury like this, but I'd expect him not to test if the injury was serious. A broad jump of 95 inches, that's under 8 feet, 13th percentile. A three cone of 8:51, first percentile, and an 18 bench reps. Now, I don't know how much of that is complete garbage or how it got out there. Or what I mean, could literally be Armand Mambu's agent is going out there and sabotaging, you know, Josh Simmons' information. But Simmons is supposedly today, and I saw another source, had 34 bench reps as the only thing he tested for at the combine, which I find more credible. But I will tell you, it did color my opinion, and I'm like, I can't have this guy in my top five anymore. I actually dropped him completely off my list as a no for the Ravens. And my reasoning was that, you know, you can't have another Ajabo situation where you lose a guy's entire first season. And my immediate reaction, if that had all been true, and maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but if it had been true, I would be, my reaction to him getting drafted the first round by somebody else would be phew. You know, I'm glad we didn't draft him. It's that much of a risk. But let's talk about Simmons, the player, and who he was, and at least get a frame for that, because I think we need to do that. 6'5", 317, 33-inch arms. You mentioned that at the Senior Bowl, I guess it was, he measured at 34 inches, which is interesting.
Yeah, which is really interesting, isn't it? It would have been a far better measurement for him. It's a full inch, which is quite a difference.
And you said it's the same testing agency doing it in both places, so it's not some sort of difference in measurement technique between two independent bodies, say.
No, it's exactly the same agency. I suppose it may have been a different person, but it's doing the actual measurements. But it's a very strange discrepancy, and it's a tough one to that. The Josh Simmons one is the one that is the most egregious, I think, because your episode with Anthony Reinhardt was really great at it, but mm-hmm. like I think that episode his data shows you the real difference there, right, between a 34 inch arm guy who has like an 80% chance of sticking at tackle based on the past, and a 33 inch guy who has a 50-50 shot. So there's quite a big difference there in terms of arm length and I'm sure you'll talk about Simmons' arm length, but I feel like it wasn't something that necessarily, I didn't feel like he was a 33 inch arm guy on tape. I don't think I felt like he had a bit more length than that.
I mean, certainly very good pass blocking statistics have shown up consistently through his career. And you know, he's battling for that left tackle job in a way with one of the most pro ready tackles there is otherwise, a guy who's actually probably going to move to guard, but another very high quality player there. Missed the second half of the season with his injury in week 7 versus Oregon. Now, one of the things, there's a context complaint that people have raised is that they had a very light front end of the schedule. So what he's got in terms of PFF scores, for example, or his incredibly efficient pass rush winning and whatnot is colored by that, you know, it was Marshall and Akron and some of those teams they were playing in the early part of the schedule, Western Michigan, you know, that won't have truly elite pass rushers on them. But his 2024 season really stood out so far from his previous play that I think context is probably a fair thing to bring up, given the way the schedule played out. Penalties have been an enormous problem in his career, and it's probably the biggest negative I have for him, other than the, you know, if these testing results happen to be true where he is on the injury track. But he's had 26 career penalties. It's one every 74.2 snaps. He had just one, though, in this abbreviated 306 snap season in his last year. So I think probably I don't want to take the limited sample size. I want to take the full thing, but the trend in the direction of the movement is right. So at least that's something he's addressing and trying to get better at. We saw what happened with the Ravens offensive lineman improving that category after week 10 of last year. And we can probably understand that it is some coachable possibility there. In terms of who he was in 2024, I'd say he's absolutely outstanding, whether he's in a true pass set or not. I think he's good at both. Kick step is good. He controls the corner very well with that kick step. So edge rushers who want to use speed, a dip or a rip move on that side, have a harder time doing it against him. Bends at the knees very naturally, does not stand up. So you can there's multiple ways you can go wrong as a pass blocker in terms of how you don't set properly. Bending at the waist is the big one. You know, hinge at the waist is one you'll always talk about. You usually get over your feet that way, and you're vulnerable to, you know, more moves that a pass rusher can give you. But standing up is another big one. And there's a bunch of guys who stand up out of their stance that largely have, you know, fallen off the list or into the honorable mention category at the highest, who have problems with that. So that's not his problem at all. He's a natural knee bender, very, very good at that. What else did I want to say? Uses his hands independently, definitely a left hand and right hand working. Ben Powers was on the show a couple of years ago, and he's with the Ravens, and he talked about the first thing he wants to do, and he's a guard, so it's a little different, is he wants to use his left hand for control and his right hand for power. And it makes sense for a right guard because your inside hand needs to be the one you're dominant with. But he wanted to get with his left hand, and he wanted to get to the V-neck of the opposing player. And generally they won't call that as holding. You know, you go right to the V-neck, they won't catch it unless the run play goes by you to the outside. And so it's a great place to hold on to your opponent if you can. And then he can use his right hand to adjust and apply pressure as it's needed. And you see some of that from Josh Simmons in terms of the independent usage. He engages far from the cone. It's kind of like the anti-Ronnie Stanley, where he's a you know, mirroring and giving ground to do so. Josh Simmons very comfortable out in space, engaging, punching, beating up a guy away from the cone. We'll see if that stays the same at the next level. They ask him to do more. He does not seem to drop his weight on opponents. I would really like to see him do that. I hope at the NFL level they teach him to go back to that, but he doesn't really do that very much. As a run blocker, he's some lunging in level two in the screen game. I'm not too concerned about that. His ability to get downfield is pretty good. Kicks out exceptionally well. That's something that shows up on tape pretty often. Because he locks in well, he can kick out well and usually create a big hole, almost like, you know, a lot of things you can talk about in terms of tools that open the hole wide. For the record, I don't believe his injury is one that can be given an NFI designation because it happened while he's playing football. I think that's right. Somebody else, if you're out there, you want to correct me on that, send me a DM or contact me somehow otherwise and let me know. I think based on the injury he falls in this draft, I would be very happy if he went prior to 27. And I'd like to hear your thoughts on that as well as your evaluation of him as a blocker.
Yeah, so he's my number four guy, Josh Simmons. So again, we're pretty close on that. I think he's the thing that jumps out on film to me. It's a shame that he can't test has tested poorly because of the injury. Because he to me, his athleticism jumps off the film from the first moment you look at him. You know, he explodes out of his stance and comes under control really quickly. I felt like he had ridiculously quick and nimble feet, but they're also very efficient. You know, he maintains his contact with the ground really well through his kick slide. He's never in trouble because of his footwork particularly. And he moves well, as you mentioned, regardless of the type of set he's taking. He really intersects the rusher at the right time on most occasions. I think those with good rush plans can put him in a bit of trouble if they are patient. If you can sort of mess with his strike timing a bit, you can get him to commit and bend at the waist. But it's rare. It doesn't happen. It doesn't happen very often. But it is one area where, like, I think if NFL players will definitely be watching, the best NFL edge rushers will definitely be watching college tape to work out these guys as they come into the league. And that'll be one area that I think some will look at. But his athleticism gets him out of trouble on a lot of occasions in the way that he moves. I really like his independent hands, as you've already mentioned. So there's a ton of stuff that I like. And I think his best strategy as an offensive, as a pass protector, is definitely getting that inside strike on that you've mentioned, getting his right hand on and pushing them towards his outstanding feet. And really taking advantage of that. And I think he does that really well. I think he maintains the half man really well. Mm-hmm. As you mentioned, Ohio State's run game was predominantly zone based. You don't see him do a bunch of gap blocks in that offense. Ironically, the Ohio State offense actually got more multiple as the year went on. So if he'd have been playing in those playoff games, you might have seen him run some different types of runs than you saw actually earlier in the season. But I didn't have too much of a challenge. I think you'd have plenty of ability to make a projection on some of the types of blocks that you don't see him do that frequently. I think the big thing for me was his athleticism is very good. He is a good, he's an ideal fit for a scheme that is zone heavier. But there's just one thing I just wanted to hit on with his zone blocking, was that I felt like there was a small deficiency where he positions really well because of his athleticism, but then the footwork immediately before he fits the block at the second level is a little bit off, and so it causes his fit to be a little bit inconsistent at the second level. But again, I feel like that's an issue.
Last step choppy. What are we talking about with
yeah, last step a little choppy, and then don't see the he doesn't have the same play strength as he could do when he gets into the fit, and he's also reaching just slightly. So I think he doesn't quite bring his feet with him at the last second, and so he loses a bit of his play strength when he gets there. That's something that you can fix.
I think so. I mean, I've often wondered this, so like baseball in particular, they tell you to run through the bag always, but there's some potential inefficiency of doing that. Run through the bag at first base, I'm talking about now.
Yeah.
But there's some potential inefficiency of doing that if your stride doesn't exactly match up, you have to overstride to get there and whatnot. But I always thought that was a possible thing. So I didn't notice that. That's a very good point about Simmons.
I think it can get fixed. I think that's the thing for me. He's a guy who really does have the traits that you need to play the position at a high level. I think it's an interesting one because I can't remember the Ravens taking his tape is so good in that half season. It's just quite a small sample size to really hang your hat on. I know he started before that, but it's just, I think he's a guy who, it's interesting. He's a guy who I said, I think they would, if they took him and you felt happy with the medical, big if, before the Ronnie Stanley signing, I had him as he'll start a left tackle and there'll be some growing pains, but they'll let him play left rather than Rosengarten. And we'd have to temper our early expectations about him, but that he would step in and probably start. But the medical is a big question mark with him. And then there are some things that I think he needs to work on that may be a bit of an issue in terms of his pass protection that are more difficult to work on than just changing some guy's tactics. But I really like him as a potential left tackle as long as the medical checks.
Okay. I guess that's good enough. I mean, you had him at number four. You said I had him at number five, and then I had Connerly at number four. So we're ready for your number three guy.
So my number three guy is Kelvin Banks, out of Texas. So I really like Kelvin Banks. And I think we're getting to the point here with Banks where that's a guy who I would be comfortable with the Ravens taking at the back end of the first round. As we mentioned in the first episode, I think they have put themselves in a position where they can go best player available. There are some sort of holes on the team, but I think that in the first round, you could see them go best player available this year. There's a chance that is Banks at that point. I really wonder how they will see him, because they don't. For this year, for my guide, I'm doing a drafted Raven comp for all of the players. I'm trying to pick out a Raven [S2] Okay. [S1] that they've drafted over the years and try and comp him. And Banks was, I think, the hardest one I had to find a comp. I don't think they've drafted a guy like Banks before, who's maybe slightly limited athletically, but with a lot of power and a technician with his hands. I sort of settled on it's rare that I've been able to say it's this guy that this guy reminds me of. I've always had to say it's this guy, but maybe with this qualifier. And so this was I don't know whether he's like a more compact Orlando Brown Jr. who's a bit more athletic and wins in different ways. But I felt like I was really trying to compromise the comp here. It's like, he's not Orlando Brown at all. It really doesn't work, but I couldn't find a guy. I'd be interested if anybody had a guy out there that they think he's close to. But anyway, I think he's a starting left tackle for some team in the league. I also think he's a guy who could play guard. So there's still a situation where the Ravens could pick him and bring him along as a guard. I think there's the element of the sense of like he's a very different type to what the Ravens normally go for at the tackle position. He's also probably better in a gap heavier scheme. So I'm not necessarily sure that the way the Ravens have gone in recent years is necessarily going to be. Is going to marry that well with Banks' strengths. But I'll talk about that. So I don't think his feet are by any means quick when he's in pass protection, but I do think he has really efficient feet, which is the thing I look for. For anybody who I've mentioned that previously, for anybody who doesn't know efficient feet, I know I'm saying this to you, Ken, but to listeners, like it's make it the biggest weapon you have as an offensive lineman is maximizing your play strength. And the biggest way that you do that is maintaining your contact with the ground as much as you can. And so when you're looking for a guy, he could have the quickest feet in the draft, but if he's pitching his feet up and down all the time, he's going to get beaten pretty often. So you want a guy who's maintaining his contact with the ground well. And I felt Kevin Banks was really good with that. I felt like he always sort of maximized his kick slide. He's not going to race on a kick slide. He's not going to be a guy who gets out there really quickly, but he's going to be a guy who's going to do his job quietly and efficiently.
I just want to point out how I'm really laughing about the inconsistency of picking Orlando Brown, one of the most notorious coming out of college. His feet right. You know, he crossed his feet was one of the complaints about him, but you know, big steps also. He's not that guy. Fortunately, Orlando got it all figured out at the NFL level and you know, became a very good player. But it's very different.
The comp doesn't work, Ken. It definitely doesn't work. It was the best fit I could come up with, but it just didn't work. So I think, but he's gonna maintain a half man all the time, and I'm pretty happy with him in terms of his kick slide, even though he's not the most athletic guy in the world. He's a really great. I think he bends well. I think he intersects the rusher always at the right time, very consistently. I think you can threaten his outside because of the foot speed, but it's just rare. It just very rarely happened on film. You just couldn't find a spot where it happened frequently. You couldn't see a guy that could do that consistently against him, which was odd given that I don't think he has the quickest feet, but he just was always, you just didn't see him get beat upfield particularly often. I think
the efficient feet are more important than quick feet sometimes.
Well, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And I think the thing with efficient feet as well is that it protects you against other types of rush as well. So and that's what I felt with him. I felt where he really excelled was his hand usage for me, which I thought was expert level. I thought his timing, his placement, his power, all excellent. It didn't matter whether he's working with independent hands or two-handed strike. I felt like he mixed up his approach really nicely too. you can disengage from him, but you're rarely going to beat him from a hand perspective because he's such a good hand fighter. He can refit his hands really well, which is something I like to see too. I think he's got really excellent play strength. He's always in a position of leverage. I think he drops a good anchor. And he's a high processor as a pass protector. He can see inside moves coming. So he may not be the most fluid guy, the most fluid athlete, but he makes up for it with his with the way he processes those things and the way he sort of diagnoses stunts and games, which I thought was very good. And he's very hard to get him to commit. You know, he won't overreact to any kind of footwork eye candy from the defensive lineman from the edge rusher. You're gonna struggle to get him to commit, and he's very patient as a pass protector. So I really like him as a pass protector. I think there are very few flaws to his game as a pass protector. In terms of run blocking, I think there is a deficiency in terms of his run blocking in space. When he has a good angle on a guy and he can run in a straight line, he's going to block the guy into oblivion. If he has to react and he has to move laterally, you're going to see him have some more trouble. When he's trying to block more nimble defenders, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen as well. I don't think he, on double teams, I didn't see him land blows particularly effectively at the first level at the line of scrimmage. He had good release timing, but to get a hat on a linebacker, but he was, I felt he was compromising his teammate a little bit too much on the double team. And I thought he, in terms of gap blocking and sort of blocking bigger dudes, I feel like he really had explosive power at the line of scrimmage. I felt like he rolled his hips on contact. And as a drive blocker, he's got really impressive position, fit, finish, really exploding into the defender. And he's going to annihilate guys as a down blocker. I think he's a guy who Greg Roman would have absolutely loved. And maybe will love for the Chargers. But I think he, although they certainly don't need a tackle now. But I think he's a starting left tackle. I really like him as a left tackle to Lamar Jackson in terms of anytime he does allow pressure, it's in a way in which Lamar Jackson is going to be able to deal with.
Slow death, right?
Exactly. So I think from a perspective, he's a good fit for the Ravens from that perspective, but he isn't a good fit from a rushing scheme perspective. So I really like him. He's not a prototypical type Ravens pick, Ravens tackle pick, but I'm a big Calvin. I'm a big fan of his. I'm a big Calvin Banks fan, and interested to hear your thoughts.
Okay, so my number one guy. So we'll start at that point. So I think he's a day one starter in the NFL, left tackle, right tackle, wherever he is, he's a day one starter. For the Ravens, I think he's a lot better. Let me get to that at the end because I want to go through, you know, some of the reasons why I like him. And some of them are a little different. I actually differ from you in some opinions about his run blocking in particular. He's got a long list of awards, several All-American selections, all Big 12, all SEC. He's got all that. And the fact that he's done all this in the SEC removes any sort of context questions about how successful he was on a per play or rate basis in terms of this last season. Very kick, quick step out of his TPS stance. So when he's in a true pass set, he's very quickly to get up in his stance, good natural knee bend to get there. Very effective hand usage. I don't need to go into that anymore. You hit on it. He's not playing with both flippers at the same time. No bad pinball player. They hit both flipper buttons at the same time, and you lose a lot of balls to earth down the middle if that happens. He's not that. His feet, I think, are good enough to mirror at the next level. He will need an enhanced recovery on 12 to 6 blocks when he's beaten. I think that's coachable. I think he's far enough along in terms of his mirror that for the enhanced speed rushers that he faces, I think it'll be, that's really my only deficit on him as a pass blocker. He's a pretty good trader of space for mirror, which you got in terms of the Ronnie Stanley type pressures, a kind of a slow death where he's step back diagonally to try and continually maintain his position relative to the quarterback. Very valuable with Lamar Jackson. I think it makes him more valuable to the Ravens that he is that. Let's go on to his run blocking. I thought, first of all, I think his foot speed was good enough both to pull and to climb as long as your expectations are managed. Now, the Ravens have had some unathletic pullers in the past. James Hurst or Bradley Bozeman from left guard were asked to pull a tremendous amount. Finding that block as the back end guy is usually a matter of decisiveness and making decisions about when you need a U-turn, maintain your momentum, find a guy. But it's usually decisiveness that is the biggest thing in processing. You mentioned, I think, in terms of pass blocking for him, I think that's an area where he won't have any problem. I think that actually being the back end of counters, I think he'll be fine with. One thing really notice that really sticks out on tape is he's a very high effort getting downfield guy. The Ravens scouts are going to love that. They love to see linemen running 25, 30 yards downfield, trying to get ahead of the play, making a block, and he's got that. So that's a very big one. I thought he was solid on combination blocks. You mentioned like disadvantaging. I think you meant disadvantaging the player who's leaving at level one.
Yes.
By minimizing the effort on that block. I mean, that's the quote unquote Tyler Linderbaum problem is the just punch at him kind of a little thing. I didn't really notice that. I thought he was good climbing. I thought he was very good sealing off that climb. So oftentimes it's not a full climb to level two where you have to go out and find a linebacker or, you know, go hunting in space looking for work. Oftentimes it's just sealing the scraping player on that left edge on a run that's heading left. And I thought he was very good at that. I thought, you know, I saw these half level pulls. Usually, by the way, that is something I ascribe to less athletic linemen than him. I think he's got normal athleticism at left tackle, but that's something I would ascribe to an Orlando Brown who would have more difficulty getting out and finding a block in space. So I thought he was quite good at that. The other thing that I really liked was I thought he had really good rapport with Hayden Connor at left guard. And Hayden Connor is not a star. Okay. He's just an average middle of the road lineman. And he was a guy that Banks, I thought, worked pretty well with on stunts and twists. And it's almost like he has to carry a lot of that relationship with Connor in terms of being able to be the better player in terms of making those stunt twist hands. It often means he has to push his guy further back towards the line of scrimmage to set him up for Connor on some of those plays. And I liked what I saw in terms of that. He did pretty well in terms of flags, one every 185.9 snaps in his final season at Texas. I'm sorry. 15 in 2,788 in his career at Texas, one every 185.9. He wasn't as good as that his last year. He's a little bit worse. But he played every snap of his college career, as far as I can tell, was at left tackle, setting aside some sixth lineman situations where he might have been not listed as a left tackle by PFF. But as far as I can tell, every single one, 42 starts in 3 years, a durability. He passes, checks the box off on that. I don't think there's any chance the Ravens get him at 27. I think he's gone long before then. But then my opinion of him is higher than yours is. I think he could be gone in the top 10. So we'll see how it plays out. Even if they traded up 4 to 5 spots, I don't see a way that they get him. And that would 4 to 5 spot trade up. People don't always get this because they think, oh, they have all these picks. Why don't just trade a few and move up? Well, they don't have enough value to move that far up. Even if they traded all their picks, they could only get up to about spot number 11 in this draft. So, you know, they're limited in terms of their total value. But, it's interesting to have that kind of a dichotomy. And now I'm really interested to hear what you have to say about the last two guys who I know we have the same players. It's just interesting to see the relativity involved in that. So I guess my number three guy is next, right?
Yeah, you go.
Okay. Yeah. Any other comments on Banks before we move on?
The only thing on Banks would be, I would say, I think 27 would be outstanding value on Banks. Like, I don't think we see him particularly. I see Membu. And
if you're looking for a better way to unwind, focus, or even get a good night's sleep, listen up. Let me tell you about Mood, the online cannabis company that's changing the game when it comes to functional gummies. They've crafted a whole line up of federally legal THC blends designed to help with everything from stress to sleep, to mental clarity, and even some spicier needs if you're into that. Now, what makes Mood different? They go beyond just THC. They pair it with herbs and adaptogens to create targeted effects that you won't find in any other dispensary. And every gummy is made with pesticide-free, small-farm American cannabis. So you're getting quality that you can trust. I've tried their sleep gummies. And let me tell you, takes about 15 minutes, and I'm out cold, no grogginess, no weird side effects, getting some of the best sleep I've gotten in my life when I take one of these gummies. And if you need a mood boost, there are Epic Euphoria gummies, game changers. And right now, Mood is giving listeners 20% off their first order by using the promo code RAVENS at checkout. So head on over to mood.com, find the perfect gummy for whatever life throws your way, and don't forget to use the promo code RAVENS to save 20%.
Close your eyes and imagine what you'll look like 6 months from now. How's your hair look? The same? Now picture how your hair would look if you started using Hims. If you're picturing the same you as before, but with much thicker and fuller hair, you'd be correct. What can happen in 3 to 6 months? You could pick up a new hobby and get not that good at it yet. You could do about half of your New Year's resolution. You could learn a few songs on the piano or pick up bass guitar. Or you could start seeing thicker, fuller hair regrowth through Hims. Not bad for just 3 to 6 months. Men, if you're starting to notice your hair thinning when you look in the mirror, you're not alone. Life just gets busier and busier, and it can feel like there's not enough time in the day to do something about it. So, try Hims Hair Loss Solutions. You can avoid jumping through a bunch of frustrating hoops and get access to treatment without even leaving your home. Hims provides you with the convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary based on studies on topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Here in America, work is in trouble. We've offshored our manufacturing, sent away good jobs, and lost so much ability to make things. American Giant is a company that's pushing back against this tide. They make high-quality clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more right here in the USA. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, promo code STAPLE20.
Your child has so much potential, but your local schools may not be right for them. Check out K-12. K-12-powered schools are accredited tuition-free online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
Campbell is as outstanding lineman, and so I think I see Banks as those three in a tier above everybody else. And so I would be surprised if he's. I would also be surprised if he's there at 27. For me, he's great, and I you know, like I said, I see very few holes in his game from a pass protection perspective. So I think he's a starting left tackle in the league. So you'd be celebrating if you get that at 27.
Yeah. Okay, I'm with you with that. I guess my number three guy's next. So I have him a place lower, I guess, than you, or maybe two. But we'll hear. Armand Manbou of Missouri is my guy. I think he's certainly a first round pick. He's the standout in the combine in terms of athleticism. The most athletic offensive tackle in this class, a 40 of 491, a vertical of 34 inches, a broad of 9 feet, 7 inches. 31 bench reps, which is good. Now, there are guys who, by the way, benched more than he did. And the big one is Josh Simmons had 34 reps at his pro day. And I don't think there's anything about a pro day bench measurement that I'd be concerned about being wrong. But they are pretty strict in terms of technique. So it might be that at the combine he might lose a rep or two to that. But this is the one that really got me. He's got extraordinarily low body fat, and he squatted 600 pounds. And that's like lifting a car, lifting a front end of a car, maybe a small car. He's got very violent, powerful hands. He can be a little slow out of his stance, would be one of the negatives I have about him. But as an athlete, there's so much upside. You almost crave things that are wrong with his game technically because you know they can be fixed. And you'd love for other teams to undervalue that. The problem is that the NFL is so combine addicted now. I think the secret on Membu is out. He goes to the top 15, probably as I would see it. So it won't be. Unfortunately, the Ravens are not going to get a shot at him. But potential to be an all-world combination blocking. I think he'll be a good climber because he's got all the quickness necessary on that. Devastating initial pop it'll all come down to in getting the absolute most out of him, whether or not he can wait for that guy to be up on one foot and make the other guy that you leave behind a better blocker in that. His penalty total for a guy who's fairly rough and playing the game now, one every 190.8 in career is pretty damn good at offensive tackle. 11 penalties in 2099 college snaps. What else would I say about this? I think if there's any chance for him to drop to the Ravens, which I don't really think is possible, you're going to want to be on draft night and figuring out what team drafted a tackle that you didn't expect to draft a tackle. So this last draft, even though there were a ton of tackles available, we pretty much knew the Ravens were in big trouble as soon as Joe Alt was taken at number 5 by the Chargers, who didn't absolutely need a tackle. But they saw too much value in Joe Alt to pass it up. And then all the other names who were, you know, graded off lesser talent and some of them not even worthy of the first round started to go drop like flies and get taken. So the Ravens got left without a dance partner at the end of round one and ended up taking Wiggins instead. But Membu is a guy I don't see any real way he drops to the Ravens. I'd love to hear your thoughts on him.
Very similar, Ken. I think he's very young, right? I think I can't remember his age, but I'm pretty sure he's very young. And so with all of the tools he has, there's a really high ceiling for him. I think he's loose and explosive in the way that he moves. He has good length for the position. I think he's the thing about him is he has that, that explosive strength thing I talked about before. Have you found his age?
I would like to buy him a beer, his first today, if possible, because he's turned 21 today.
There we go.
That's a hell of a young player.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I think when you watch him on film, he's, you know, there's such a high ceiling because of the athletic gifts, but there's so much technical refinement already as a player, that you can see the trajectory to do more. I really like him in terms of the explosive strength thing I mentioned earlier. He's really powerful, and he just loves to deploy that power as well. Mm-hmm. And you see it so often on tape. There's so little. There's things for him to work on. There's little things to work on. One thing was I thought he was a bit late with his hands sometimes when people try to convert speed to power on him. But I think, you know, overall, he's an intriguing guy. I think there's absolutely no way the Ravens get their hands on him. It would be great if they did, but it's just not going to happen. He's a great tackle. I would say one of the things in this class I would say is that Joe Alt for me graded out higher than all of my guys on this list. And so there's like sort of a little bit of a tempering here to sort of say, like, I don't think Membu, and we're going to talk about Campbell as well, are necessarily guys that would rise to the same level as the last draft class, as the top of the last draft class. But I also think that this draft class is overall weaker than last year's draft class. So you're going to see this guy get pushed up and taken easily within the first half of the first round.
Yeah, that's where I am too. So thanks for giving it away that Will Campbell was our lone remaining guy on both of our lists. But did you have him at number two or number one?
Will Campbell had it at number one. I remember it too. Campbell at one.
Okay. All right. Well, start us off in terms of Will Campbell and what you thought about him.
I think Will Campbell is the quintessential arm length discussion guy, right? So Will Campbell measuring 32 5/8 inches at the combine. He measured 33 inches at the LSU Pro Day the other day. But we'll not trust schools, I think, as much as we trust Senior Bowl and combine measurements. So you know, likely to be less than 33 inches. The interesting thing for me was that, like I said, I loved the episode with Anthony Reinhardt the other day, because I felt like one of the things it sort of said to me was that, you know, the 33 inch and above guys are the evaluation guys. It's the, you know, it's 50-50 and slightly above when you're getting over 33 inches. So then it's watch the film, make the evaluation, make the projection on that guy as to whether they're going to be able to do it or not. Will Campbell obviously is a guy who is below that threshold of 33. And so you're starting to, and I think when you look at guys that are in the league currently, there are about a third of the starters in the NFL are now less than 34 inch arms. And there's some really good ones in Rashawn Slater and Penei Sewell. Zach Tom has done pretty well. Jake Matthews has been long-term guy now as well at just over 33 inches, I think he is. So you've got a bunch of guys that you can look to. There are less guys you can look to at less than 33 inches. You're talking about Braden Smith, basically, and Bernard Raimann, who get the job done in a particular way, but aren't ever going to be elite offensive tackles. And you're drafting Will Campbell. You'll be drafting Will Campbell very high in this draft class. The thing I think about him is that I think he is offensive line one. Like that's what I believe he is. He is O-line one. I don't see a reason not to try him at offensive tackle. I don't know that he's going to be able to do it. I think he will. I think you'll get a Raimann type player. Like, I think he'll be good. I think he'll be fine. And maybe you get a good guy. And the other thing I would say about it is listening to him talk, I'd want to give him a shot at it from the way he talks. He's very passionate about playing the position. He is very annoyed about the fact that there is a discussion now about his arm length and feels that there wasn't a discussion beforehand about his arm length. So I kind of like that chip on his shoulder, and I kind of would want to give him the chance. But I think he's not a guy where you're necessarily making a deficit judgment about moving him inside. What you're doing is moving him inside because there's a chance he's going to be an all-pro at guard. And that's how good he is as an offensive lineman. And I think that's the useful discussion to have, because he always plays with outstanding play strength. And despite the size and the arm length, he's plenty athletic, but it's that play strength that is really, really special. And so are his hands. His hand usage is exceptional. And you very rarely see him in trouble against even the very best edge rushers in college. You also know that he can play inside. There was the Ole Miss tape that Walter Nolan ended up coming outside and playing against him a couple of times. And there was maybe like a half win for Walter Nolan where there was a long developing play and he got a little bit of a pressure. But then there was another rep where Will Campbell forklifts him out of the way. And Walter Nolan is a powerful guy. So I feel like I do think he's offensive line one. I think he's a polished, refined technician with really good athleticism who maximizes his play strength consistently. He's an excellent pass protector. He's going to be very good in the run game. He's going to be scheme diverse. And so for me, he is the best offensive lineman in this draft. And so the interesting discussion really, I think, with him is about where he ends up playing at the next level.
I want to stick that in the parking lot, the OL1 in this thing. I want to stick in the parking lot because I think it's the last thing I want to discuss with you about this, because I've got a twist on that. But I'm with you that Will Campbell is an extraordinarily polished across the board talent. His at or near the combine tops in terms of the 40, the vert, the broad. I mean, he's up there with Mambu, frankly, in terms of athleticism, not quite at his level, but he's close. He's got a very well-distributed mass that would allow him to play at guard or tackle, a little more sand in the pants than some of the other very lean offensive tackles that are in this group that you, if they can't play tackle, you wonder, can they even play guard at all? Because, you know, they have arm length concerns, but they might have to really play center. He's not that. He'll be a fine guard if he doesn't end up a tackle. He had a poor penalty total last year. His overall penalty total is pretty good at 101 every 170.2 snaps, but he did have 9 last season, which was not good. He's had to be a good hand fighter with his dimensions being what they are. And I think that is the only real issue I have with Campbell is he's so polished that I believe there might be less upside. It shows up in multiple places in his blocking. But you know, one is in picking up stunts and twists. LSU is well coached on the offensive line, but he's very good at working with the man next to him to deal with stunts and twists. A good relative depth is kept. Neither of those guys thinks they're playing on an island and they have to stop this guy alone. And that leads to problems with mismatched depth that are the bane of trying to pick up stunts, twits, and blitzes too, for that matter, when you have to hand off. I think he's got a good combination of being a lockout player, a 12 to 6 bailout player when he needs to be in terms of blocking around the edge of the pocket. When he's initially beaten outside, I think he's finding that athletic, very fast climber. And I think what he does in level 2 is pretty good as well in terms of reasonably good maintenance of his feet, lines up blocks pretty well, doesn't get exceptionally lungy. All these are positive characteristics. He's just extremely polished in terms of what he brings to the table. And he brings less to the table in terms of what he has, in terms of his physical gifts. His frame is fine. It's really just about the length in terms of that. So here's where I want to come back to the question, because he's my number – is my number 2 or 3 guy. I think he's my number 2 guy. Yeah, he's my number 2 guy. No doubt, I agree with you basically in terms of if you just had to pick one offensive lineman and they were all going to play the same position, then he's my guy. But if I think Kelvin Banks is my number 1 offensive lineman overall, because I would put a relative weighting on it such that if the guy can play left tackle, it's a 10. And if he can play right tackle, it's an 8. If he can play left guard, it's a 7. And so if that position is only 70% as valuable, and maybe I only save less cap space by having Will Campbell there, then I got to think twice about whether or not he's the appropriate guy to draft first overall, or whether I believe he's the right guy. But he is the most polished, the most immediately pro ready for somewhere offensive lineman there is in this draft. I completely agree with you on that.
And I think your point there, Ken, is where you get into the discussion, don't you, about the difference between arm length from an evaluation perspective, where it's a small piece of the puzzle, and then you go to the tape and you look at the evaluation, you're looking at all the different data points and measurables that you can throw into the evaluation, and it's a part of the puzzle where you're playing that information in. It's a different kettle of fish if you're a general manager running a draft, making a decision about whether this guy is going to, like, then you sort of have to pull in the outlier conversation, right? Where you're sort of saying, is it, can we really be right that many times about a guy who's got less than 33 inch arms playing offensive tackle? Like, not every guy can do it. And there are very few guys who can do it. And it's, to be honest, it's a decent bet that this guy might be able to do it because of all of the high end traits that he has to be able to potentially make up for that. And you know, you're like, the bet you're making isn't as great as some scout coming in and saying this fourth round guy with 32 inch arms is going to play left tackle. But it has to go into the conversation when you're thinking about value in the draft room and you're thinking about how you're making that selection. I think it has to come into the conversation.
You literally have tens of millions of cap dollars on the line with this wager. And you know, if you have to find a new left guard, that's relatively cheap. If you have to find a new left tackle, enormous barriers to entry, enormous. So you got to be very careful with that, with who has true left tackle. And you know, honestly, if Will Campbell has a 70% chance to stick at left tackle, I think that drops him below Banks for me. Here's where I take a lot of heat for this, by the way, on the arm length thing in general, and I understand it. I don't really care. But it gives me a chance to tell the story is that it feels like I'm beating up on a guy who he's doing the best he can when he's just not built to play that position. But that's all of football. You know, nobody's saying, you know, come on, this guy tries really hard at wide receiver. Don't worry too much about his 4.8 40. Please put him out there and give him a chance. That's all you need to do. Look, he can catch the football. He's got contested catch skills, and I can pick out these other three things, and then I can give you tape of three plays that he made that were good. You know, and the nature of being an NFL general manager is, how can I not spend cap space? Has to be the first question you ask. And you're making an enormous bet of future cap to take Will Campbell over a guy who, I mean, Membu would be, you know, I think he's 85 or 90% to be able to stick at tackle, whether it's left or right, might not be left, and be very effective. I'm not convinced in terms of the case of Will Campbell that he's necessarily going to stick there. So that's the objection. And I know people think I'm being tremendously unfair. They certainly never liked the way I talked about Patrick McCary in that way, because he was a short arm dude. They don't like the way I talk about Linderbaum, where it's less important on the inside, but you know, still have a good player, but with his own pass blocking weaknesses. But it's just the nature of the game. It's exactly the problem you're trying to solve is how can I get this done with the least cap?
And this is the thing for me is that I think it's a data point that goes into the evaluation. And when you, when you have that come into it, you end up, when I evaluate a player, there are some players that I can watch three games on and I've got who they are. Like I know who this guy is. I know where he wins, where he doesn't win, and it's fine. But normally when it's a guy like this, when it's a guy like Will Campbell, I'm going to have to watch a lot more games because I'm going to get into a situation where like I want to see enough times repeatable him not struggling with things because of the length. And that's sort of, it sort of goes into the evaluation. And you've got to be, I feel there's a responsibility to bring data and analytics into your evaluation if you're a film watching person, because you need to understand that you can't be right that many times on outliers. And so you need to make sure that when you are making that bet and you're making that projection about a guy that you're absolutely certain and sure that there isn't a deficiency there because of that. That's where it goes for me. But like I said, I do think there's a different conversation for a decision maker of making that decision about a guy in the room. It's easy enough, I think, for a scout to sit there and say, this is what I think, and this is the projection I'm making. But when you've actually the guy in the chair making the choice, it's a very different thing, I think.
Would it be fair to say that it might very well be true that Campbell would go to the NFL, play a plus left tackle for his entire career, make 2 to 3 Pro Bowls, but not be a consistent Pro Bowler, whereas he could move to left guard and be a Hall of Famer?
Well, this is the thing that is the discussion for me with Will Campbell is that I think and it's a strange one because it's a similar thought process I had, not similar, it's similar in some ways, thought process I had with Tyler Linderbaum when the Ravens picked Linderbaum, was that I felt like as a lover of football, I kind of wanted Linderbaum to go to a very heavy zone scheme because he was one of the best guys in space I'd ever evaluated as an interior lineman at the college level. So it was interesting to me that the Ravens took him at the time with a much heavier gap scheme. It was a strange sort of combination. It was sort of saying, actually, we'll take this guy, but he's not necessarily going to rise to the ceiling of what he can be in our scheme. Now, it's a different conversation with Campbell, but I think you're absolutely right to say that this is a situation where there's a guy, you're not moving Will Campbell inside because he struggles with his length. There are some things on tape where I see some of the length issues come into it. There's a few things with particularly with high side rushes where I felt like the length sort of disadvantaged him a little bit. And so there are some instances on tape where you can see it. But for me, it isn't a question of this guy can't play offensive tackle. I think he can. I think he'll play it to a good level. I think he'll actually play it close to Rashawn Slater's level, potentially. Don't think all the way there, but potentially close to that because they have similar arm length. But it's, like you said, it's the question of if you move him inside, I think he's an all-pro. And that is probably more valuable, I think, than what you're going to get. And I think that's the part of the discussion, I think, that sort of gets a bit lost with Will Campbell.
Yeah, it's an interesting, and this entire discussion is so terrific. Why don't we name a few honorable mentions before we go off? But again, we're very short on time. We've killed this off. But give me your top three honorable mentions, and maybe why you like each guy.
Yeah, I think like is a strong word at this point of the process, yeah. But definitely guys who are intriguing to me. I think I'd start with Charles Grant, who is an interesting guy just because of the size and the length and the athleticism. It's going to be really sought after. I think he's a long way from being a starter in the NFL right now. I actually wanted to see him more dominant on tape at William & Mary than he actually was. There's lots of bad habits that he's fallen into because he's the most athletic guy in the trenches at William & Mary. But I think there's lots of, like, there are lots of stuff to work on there. He's obviously very raw and hasn't necessarily had the coaching. I would have loved to have seen him get to the Senior Bowl, but obviously he didn't, so we couldn't see him face that elite competition. He's a complete project, but he's a really intriguing project with some of the tools that he has.
We'll alternate here and then we can kind of keep this straight. But I like Cameron Williams out of Texas. Do I like Cameron Williams, the current player? No. Do I like Cameron Williams, who he could be? Yes, I really do. I mean, he's an enormous penalty problem. He had something like a penalty every 30 snaps or something I think it might be for his career, actually, because it's an enormous hoard of penalties he's had. He's had a lot of other issues that are really things you can coach out of a player. And part of it is he's gone through this huge weight loss thing that he used to weigh close to 400 pounds, and he dropped about 35 pounds to get into playing shape at 340 or whatever he weighs right now. He's one of the biggest tackles in the group. But he's a guy, I think, if you're going to undervalue a guy, and there might be a guy you can teach to do some of the right things on a football field, I think Cameron Williams would be my guy.
Cool, thanks, Ken. And Cameron Williams for me is an interesting tackle guard conversation as well. I kind of quite like some of his traits, potentially move inside at guard. Carson Vinson is my second guy out of Alabama A&M. I think you'll notice there's a bit of a trend here for me. I've got, though my third guy isn't this, but the first two guys are guys that I think are a long way from playing tackle right now in the NFL, but I would rather take a gamble on them than a guy I've seen play a lot of snaps and I don't like. And so when they're getting into the later rounds, there's some guys who really struggled in a lot of elements of playing the position. And Vinson and Grant also struggled in some of those elements, but I'm not confident with the coaching they've received and I think they have a higher potential upside. So Vinson's an interesting one as well, who again is a small school guy, but with the athletic measurables and the length to play the position, needs a lot of refinement, struggles with hand timing placement. But I do like his foot speed, his quickness, he's explosive. All of those things I think contribute to a high ceiling for him, especially as a guy in space. And I did like his Senior Bowl week. I thought he competed pretty hard, and I enjoyed watching him in Mobile in the one-on-ones. So a long way from starting in the NFL, and a guy that hopefully you can get really late or possibly as a UDFA, but I think he's got some potential.
All right, that's a good one. Anthony Belton is who I'll mention next, who has a kind of a prototypical size for a right tackle at 6'6", 336, and 34-inch arms, roughly 33 7/8. Played at NC State. Penalties have been an issue for him. He's one every 93.8 snaps, so that's not something is good. But he looks reminds me of Orlando Brown a little bit, a guy who's difficult to beat on the bull rush. And I think he's the kind of guy that the Ravens could develop over 2 years, that they don't need him in 2025. They can use him in 26 or even 27, given how their roster is set. He might have to play a little bit during that time, but you basically have a pretty reasonable developmental arc to fix some significant problems. And I think if you could get him even at the end of round four, I might be okay with that. I think that's where he represents value to the Ravens.
So I also I'm intrigued by Belton, and I think he's also draftable, and I would look at that later in the draft. My final guy is Ajani Cornelius at Oregon, who is very different to Vincent, and Grant, in that he's a 4-year starter at right tackle. He played 2 at Rhode Island before he transferred to Oregon. He's a much more polished guy than the other two, and I think there's a chance that you could kick him inside if he's not a starting tackle. But I do think, I think his footwork is a thing that needs to be fixed. But I think he's an assassin with his hands, and I think he wins his fair share of reps against good competition. He looks like a guy. He's not an explosive strength guy. He's more of a pusher in the run game. And so there's some places where you need to compromise a bit with him. But I think there's a world where you can get him in an NFL building and probably develop to the extent where within the first half of his rookie contract, he's going to be an adequate starter. And so, again, I don't think he's a guy that you need to look to and say, oh, this guy's going to be a starting left tackle in the league. He's not.
You're saying his second year, he can be an adequate
starter. No, second. I meant second half of rookie contract. So I think there's a chance. But it won't take him too long, I don't think, because I think he's not that far from who he is. But I don't think who he is a particularly high ceiling.
Gotcha.
So he's not necessarily a guy who I'm looking at and thinking, you know, he's going to be our left tackle of the future. I think he comes in and does a job at right tackle in a couple of years if they have to move Rosencarton over to the left.
All right, I'll bring up one more guy, and this is a guy, if you're going to have him as your developmental guy, you got to be sure about Rosengarten, is Holden Pierce of Rutgers. Sixth-round pick for me. He's actually kind of similar size to like a Mims in terms of his enormous frame and body at 6'8", 341, 36-inch arms. He had a 5'42", 40 at an other measurement, so somebody else who's probably his best friend is timing him in the 40 and got him at 5'42", is the way I look at that number. He once weighed 450 pounds, and he's dropped a lot of weight to get there, to drop the 110 pounds. I think he's a guy that intrigues me and is probably an eventual Daniel Fa'alele type guard potentially, or maybe he sticks at right tackle, learns to block 12-6, be an absorbing bull rusher and absorb the bull rush very well. And we'll see how that works out, but he's a guy. And again, sixth round pick, no higher. But that's where I'd like Holden Pierce. And I know you mentioned him earlier, so I thought I'd bring him up.
No, I also think that would be fine with me as well. Sixth round pick. Like, I was a bit mean about him earlier, but he's an interesting guy. He's got some catastrophic losses on film because of his height and his inability to bend. But actually, I think if you could teach him some more of the ways to succeed as a taller guy in the NFL, then I think you know there's a path there for him to something, I think, in the league.
James, I could not have had more fun having this conversation with you over the last 2.5 hours. And this will make, I hope, two good shows for folks out there listening. Thanks for staying with us. James, tell folks where they can talk read your stuff online.
Yeah, so you can find me on X at NFL Ogden. That'll be where you'll be able to read my draft guide, which releases before the NFL draft, a couple of weeks before, where I profile lots of players and tell you how I think they fit with the Ravens particularly. So you'll be able to find me there. You also hear me talk on the UK Ravens podcast most weeks, and I write for Russell Street Report too, so you can find me there as well.
All right, outstanding. Thanks for joining us, folks. Please join us on draft night. 1, 2, and 3 will be there for all 3 days using a a spreadsheet approach that's collaborative, including people who are on the panel and also people who are in the room just want to ask questions. It's very interactive, and I think you'll really enjoy it as a way to rock the draft. Hopefully, it will become your regular stopping point for that. James, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Hackers don't need much. Just one leaked password can potentially unlock a treasure trove of personal information, leading to stress, pain, and permanently wrecked credit. Don't be an easy target. Get protection by Aura today. Aura protects your identity, finances, and family, all in one powerful app. Get real-time alerts, safeguard your accounts, and block scams before they happen. If identity theft strikes, we help you recover. Stay protected at aura.com/listen. That's aura.com/listen.
Your child has so much potential, but your local schools may not be right for them. Check out K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited tuition-free online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.